Welcome to the Real Estate Dads podcast. We have our guest, Scott Kidd. Scott is a captain in the maritime industry where he has worked in that industry for 25 years. He's a father of two daughters and is an active family man. It has an amazing story regarding coming to the U.S. with not much money and following the American dream that his parents instilled in him of being a hard worker. He eventually ended up in Fort Lauderdale with a story with $20 in his pocket, where fast forward to now, he has a real estate portfolio, raises capital for syndications, is a GP and an LP, and is starting his own fund. And we're so happy to have him on the show and to have him tell us our story. So Scott, thanks for being here with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tell us about all of this yachting. Yachting, captaining of ships, not boats, but ships.
I just got in today, actually just about an hour ago, to Turks and Caicos from Jamaica. And been working on private yachts for 24, almost 25 years. Did some sailing before that. Kind of just fell into it. I'm lucky I fell into it because I found another thing that I really love other than real estate, multifamily, and syndication. They're both pretty similar because both need teams for anything to succeed. Without a team or a good crew, the boat goes nowhere. It can be a terrible experience because we all have to live with each other.
How big are these yachts?
The one I'm on right now is 50 meters, so it's 164 feet.
Yeah, Scott, when you talked about your job a little bit when Max was getting coffee there, I instantly, like, it made me think of below deck. So is that at least like 50%, you know, give us an idea of what you do?
It can be like, you know, managing the crew and stuff. I can be the best and the worst parts of it sometimes. It just all depends. You really don't want to have that much drama. And I found that over the years and just in any job or organization, the people that are working really hard don't really have time for all the drama because they're working. It happens, you know, some more than others. We have our moments, but we try to have a drama-free zone, keep the same people around. It's that way we get consistency. And, you know, really what's unique about yachts and stuff, it's really about the service and about the clients, you know, that kind of stuff. We got to be able to think on our feet and be there, you know, make things happen. You know, the timeline is usually yesterday to get everything done. You know, they want everything before they think of it. So,
right.
And is that, you know, and your clients, are they, how often are they using these vessels and how often are they out just running whatever function of their life or business?
It depends. The average person, I would say, is usually about 10 weeks a year. If they're a heavy use, usually it's less, you know, 5 years. And then they usually charter them out for about 10 weeks out of the year. If they're using it on, you know, 4 or 5 weeks out of the year, they usually charter it just to offset and, you know, there's some tax benefits and stuff like that from that. Most of it's write-off, but the yacht, for the most part, is just a loss. They really don't make any money for anyone. If you're lucky, you might offset 30 to 50% of your cost, salaries and stuff like that. But, you know, it comes in when it's run as a business. There's one, not a CPA or anything, but you are able to offset some of it so you can justify having it. You know, if it's, you chalk it up as entertainment and you're doing entertaining some of your business clients and stuff like that, and you enjoy being on the water and stuff, it's a cost that you're going to spend anyway.
That's really amazing. Like, you know, hearing about some of these, I guess it's, you know, when I hear that, I think of this kind of different level of wealth that I'm, you know, not connected with. We definitely have, you know, investors who are wealthy, and we've worked with a lot of wealthy people, and I've worked for a couple of guys who have, you know, some big net worths. But you know, but just hearing, you know, about some of these individuals that have yachts that are that large and that they're constantly sailing, pleasure sailing, the business sailing in different locations, it's really a different world that you have access to.
Yeah, it's a very unique world and very small boutique industry. It's, it's taken me to a lot of places that I probably never really thought about before and never dreamed of. But I explain it like this, you know, I knew people had a lot of wealth and a lot of money on before I got into this line of work. I just didn't know they had that much more than I do.
So much, right?
Yeah, it's a, you know, you hear stories of them and money spent sometimes. It's a lot more than most people make in a lifetime sometimes. It's pretty impressive. But, it, you know, when you think about it, you start to get used to it like anything else. It's just numbers with zeros behind it.
Well, I was curious what your family life is like. What's your family look like, kids, wife, and kind of want to get into what how it works with how your family handles you being gone for so long at a time.
I've been lucky, worked for some pretty great families that they wanted, you know, a family-oriented program where, you know, when I was gone for an extensive period of time, they would rent us an apartment, and my family, especially my wife and the kids were young, they'd come with us. I got us an apartment in Italy, so they were close by. Granted, we were pretty busy, but at least they were close by, and we were able to do some things. It's opened up for some unique experiences. It kind of gave my, and I have two daughters, they're 19 and 17 now, gave them so kind of a travel bug, as you would, because we were also, they put us up a different family in the Martha's Vineyard for the summer. I've been lucky to work for some great families that, really looked after us. And now I work 6 weeks on, 6 weeks off, so I'm not gone as much, and my kids are a little bit older. And not to say that it's not as difficult, but I know, you know, other people in different careers that have sales careers where they're gone, you know, 3 weeks out of the month and stuff also. It doesn't make it easy, but my wife, she used to work on boats as well, and she's also a yacht charter broker, so she understands. And, you know, I call my wife and kids pretty much every night, you know, with WhatsApp and, you know, FaceTime and all those things make it really easy. It doesn't, you know, you're not there, but at least you can, you know, see them and, you know, partake in some of the activities that are going on. And then that way has made it easier, but they understand that that's, you know, what I do and what, you know, it's provided for a great life for all of us. You know, it's enabled us to travel and go a lot of different places and I live a decent quality life. You know, I come from a large family. My wife does as well. So we're both very family oriented. You know, you just kind of work it out. There's things that come up. We celebrated our 20th wedding anniversary a couple weeks ago before I got back on the boat. So you can do it. It's not easy, but nothing in life that's worth it is easy. This takes a lot of work. We're both different people, you know, and as you grow, you just hopefully that you grow with that person, you know. And I'm lucky. My wife is very amazing. She's I'd hate to think where I would be without her. I'd probably be that guy.
Well, you do have her, and you have some kids now. So, and 6 weeks on, 6 weeks off, and this has continued, you know, forever. So you've been doing this, working on these, you know, large vessels for 25 years. So you were. Had already been doing that for about 5 years prior to meeting your wife. And then your daughters, you said, were 17 and 19?
Yeah, 17 and 19. She's going to be 18 this year. I've been in the boats for about 24 years. Before that, I was IT and had some other businesses and stuff.
And within that 6 weeks on and 6 weeks off that you do now, was that always the case? So even when they were young, was it similar to that same kind of schedule?
No, this is just in the last couple of years, but I'd always looked towards, and unfortunately the industry has grown towards that way where the boats have gotten very busy and much larger. So it kind of, in the commercial maritime, that's how most of the careers work. They're on some type of rotation. So it's kind of gravitated towards that, which I think is helpful because you can have a career and have a family. It makes, you know, it's more accommodating, I think, because there's been jobs where I've been gone for extensive periods of time. It was tough. I mean, it wasn't easy, you know, and it didn't really have much time to fly home or couldn't get them to fly out. It was, I'm not going to say it wasn't a struggle, but we made it through it. We just made it work. My wife was also, her parents were in the Army. So was her grandfather. So she moved around a lot and she understands a lot of those things. That's a much tougher lifestyle being deployed.
Yeah, it definitely is. Okay, so now you've got this job, you've got an ability to be able to have free time, to have your calls with your daughters, and you have your real estate investing career. Let's go into that. So tell us about that a bit.
you know, it is a great industry. It's also a very unstable one. It's kind of one of those here today, gone tomorrow. You know, you can go from hero to zero all in one day. If the economy takes a dip, certain people, and I've had it happen to me where they give you the call and say, hey, we're not going to do anything with the boat anymore. Just, you know, get rid of all the crew, including yourself. And we'll just call it that. And we're going to put the boat up for sale, you know, or if we're going in a different direction, we've got somebody else. It can be a very fickle business. So with that said, I, you know, always had in the back of my head, I always had side hustles or something that I was trying to not. Real estate always, you know, I started, you know, with the first house, family got bigger, rented that one, bought a bigger house, moved on to doing that. And I just figured, like a lot of people, you know, I buy another house every so often and rent that and keep moving up that way. And then I had a friend that we were, you know, just talking one time, and he told me that, you know, he had bought and sold a 46-unit apartment building in Houston, and he'd made a decent amount of money. And I said, well, you can do that. And he goes, yeah, you can do that. I did it, so anybody can do it. That kind of was my light bulb moment, as per se. And I did some more investigating and started going to a lot of meetup groups and just finding out as much as I could. And then eventually invested in some smaller joint ventures and some limited partnerships, which limited partnerships are basically you put up the money and the general partners, they run the deal. And that was a really great experience because the person that I invested with allowed me to learn more about how the whole thing worked, kind of led me down that path towards syndications.
And are you doing your own syndications now?
Yes, but my main focus is mostly raising capital and investor relations and focusing on the capital stack, you know, or helping organize the mortgage, the loans and stuff like that, private, you know, preferred equity and those type of things, because it's something I can do while I'm still working on the boat, you know, field the phone calls, schedule all my stuff at night or early morning, or investor relations. I can follow up with investors. And that's for the most part, I come in as a co-GP, and I'm also working on my own fund of funds to where I can be a part of a lot more opportunities.
And how many deals have you funded so far?
To date, I've done one that has gone through. I've had three that did not close. I've done two other joint ventures, and I'm working on a fund at the moment.
Are you using the A-Vestor? Is that the type of fund you're trying to set up, one that you can go into anything, or are you looking for something particular?
Yes, actually, because this particular fund is a straight fund, but my own fund of funds will probably be A-Vestor, because I've bought an e-commerce store, and I'm looking at buying another one. And we're looking at putting the e-commerce stores in the fund and using them to buy a multifamily, because the returns are pretty quite good. And it's something that my partner has a management company, and he manages the e-commerce stores, and he buys and sells them. And we came up with the idea to put them in the fund. But right now we're just looking at annualizing the returns to make sure that they're consistent, to figure out what our scale is going to be and how we're able to put them in structure and put in the fund. I don't think it'll be much different than any other businesses, but it's fairly unique because around the end of the year, the fourth quarter is always heavier, especially when you get into some products. You want to make sure that's annualized throughout the other quarters. So that's what we're working on right now.
Man, that's interesting. That's cool, man. I hope that goes good. Sure will.
So far, it's been good. My partner, he's a lot younger than I am, and he's a very sharp. He used to be in private equity, and but it's strange that he always said he wouldn't get much traction because he looks very young as well. But another friend of mine, she said, well, I wouldn't invest in any e-commerce with somebody that's over 50, because I wouldn't think that they knew what they were doing.
That's funny, man. That almost, you know, when you said it almost makes sense, because, you know, a lot of times it's the reverse. It's like, I don't want to invest in your deal because you're a kid, right? But it's the opposite.
Especially, you know, like with apartment deals, it's the other way. You know, you really got to have some really solid experience on your team, or no one's really going to be like, oh, we'll pass, you know. But if it's e-commerce, if I had my dad was working on it or somebody my age, you know, it'd be a little more iffy for some people because they're like, well, you know, maybe that's not your area of expertise. Whereas if you're, you know, in your 20s, I think it's a little more believable because those guys, you know, the millennials get a bad break. People say they're lazy, but I think they really have so much more opportunity that they can run everything from their phone that they get a bad rap because they can put their car in Turo. They can Airbnb their other two rooms or their couch and buy and sell stuff on Facebook Marketplace and do all these, you know, sublet their storage units and stuff like that. You know, they can literally have two or three side hustles and make more money than most people do at a normal job.
So I have one Turo, three Airbnbs, and I have a side buying stuff at an auction and selling it on Facebook Marketplace business too. It's like, nice. You're listing those things off and I was like, yeah, that's true. I do. Yep. Why not?
Yeah, I mean, you know, hats off to you because I think I tried to do that, but that stuff really didn't exist. You know, you had the newspaper or the classifieds and you have to wait for the phone to ring or, you know, or whatever. You know, you have to go and try and sell it at the pawn shop, or garage sales or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, it's a different world now.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
And I think they have to figure out how to, you know, gauge the employment and unemployment now, because there's people that they say have dropped out of the workforce, but maybe they're kind of self-employed, but they're not really counted as such.
Yeah.
You know?
That's an interesting point.
Yeah, it is.
So, you know, I don't know if you have people that are not in the workforce, maybe there's 4 or 5, maybe 10% of them are just kind of doing some side hustles, you know, or driving an Uber or something. You know, maybe I'm the eternal optimist because I think that there's just so much opportunity out there that I kind of had my eyes closed to a lot of these things. I didn't know they existed. I didn't know that you could invest in these apartments. I didn't know you could buy an e-commerce store. I didn't know you could do all these things. But the more people I meet, the more things that you see that people are doing. And I get excited because it's just, you know, people are out doing all these amazing things. And that was the reason why I, you know, went into real estate and stuff, is just because it helped me explore more options that gave me the passive income that if the job goes away, then, you know, hey, I got that cushion, or I have, at least I know there's opportunities there that I can go after.
Rent's due first of every month, right?
Yeah.
What I like hearing about your setup is that you actually have this ability to have this job and also work in real estate. You know, for those of us who have worked, you know, career real estate, which, you know, I mean, Trevor, you've got some other side hustles. You know, I've been in the real estate industry.
They're little compared to my real estate stuff, but yeah.
Yeah, I get it. You know, but I've always kind of had this, you know, feast or famine, you know, job cycle where, you know, there's times where I've made a ton of money in a year. And then all of a sudden we have the great, you know, recession, or we have other years where, you know, it's just a thin year for whatever reason. And, you know, and all of a sudden you're like, whoa, you really have to make sure you're a good squirrel. And right now we're in one of those kind of times, you know, where things, you know, there's not as many transactions as there were, and people are doing a lot more business building. But, you know, but the fact that you've got, you know, this other job that you sounds like you really love, that's also been a very, you know, good long-term career for you, has been kind of awesome. It's awesome to do that.
I tell people, you know, because a lot of people say, well, when are you going to quit the military? And I said, probably, I don't think I ever will, because I still love it. And the more I get more into the real estate stuff, and it becomes to where working on the boats is eventually going to be a choice, you know, it makes it a lot easier and it makes it more fun, you know, and it makes me more relaxed because I don't necessarily have to be here, but I choose to be here. So I want to make the best of it. Puts me in a better mindset and a better frame of mind, because I want a lot of these younger folks to go through these things, and I want them to see that these opportunities that they can do while they're on the boats, and just kind of make their life easier and better to where they can, you know, buy real estate or start a business, or, you know, just do something that, hey, maybe they're not, maybe this is a 10-year career for you. Maybe it's a full-time career for 20 years, but you know, just to let them know that they have those options. You know, if the job is too much for you and it's very negative for you, you shouldn't be there. If you don't want to be there, there are options for you to go somewhere else and do other things. It's a choice everyone can have if they just open their eyes up and open themselves up to new ideas and new things. And that's something that I'm a big proponent of, is just trying new things. I mean, it might turn out terribly, but you're probably going to learn something from it. So it's not a total loss.
You can't grow if you're not trying, and trying includes a little bit of failures occur, but it's getting up from them. And and I think that's a side note to kind of what you were saying, which is you just have to try. You can't not. That's the only way guaranteed to not change. And and Scott, I have so many questions here.
That's all.
Any crazy stories on these boats, your rogue waves or danger out at sea?
There's quite a few. There's some, but unfortunately that have been life-threatening, but I've had some medical emergencies and things like that, but a lot of them have to be to think about them, because a lot of these boats also, we sign a lot of NDAs where we're not supposed to really, happens on board stays on board, but I can speak generally about one of them, and it's just kind of, some people post about it and do all these things, but it's kind of an unwritten.
Well, I guess I wasn't hoping to get the information on all the personal actions. I kind of knew there was going to be laws for that, but I was wondering.
I was planning on naming names.
Oh. Yeah. I'm sure that would go well in your industry.
Today is also my last day.
Oh, nice.
Gosh, that would
let's not do that.
Well, I guess I was wondering, hurricanes, typhoons, danger at sea.
Yeah, I've been in some pretty heavy weather. I've actually been through a couple of hurricanes at anchor, and I've been out at sea where it's been blowing 60, 70 knots, and it's not fun. I wouldn't wish that on anybody, but I lived through it. It wasn't, the boats that I was on at those times, they were very strong boats that were made to handle that. So you just kind of slow down and you just have to wait it out. Like any bad thing in your life, or anything that's tough at that moment, it'll pass. You'll get through it. And most of the time you're better person for it. You kind of kiss the ground when you get there moment.
Wow. What a relatable relatable moment.
Yeah. There was one time where a friend of mine and I were on the boat, and we were in the Chesapeake, and the storm was coming, and he and I had just set the anchor, and then a couple of boats anchored near us, and they kept coming down on us. And then we were like, well, we kind of called them on the radio and said, hey, you're pretty close to us. You're getting pretty close. If when the breeze picks up, you're going to be on top of us. And like, well, no, we only have one motor, this and that. And they were pretty unorganized, and they were actually pretty scared. So I said, well, let's move. So we went and we moved. And right as we dropped the anchor, it was myself and my friend. It started blowing. It was like 50, 60, 80. It was blowing about 100. And we're to cross the deck, and we're literally crawling back to go inside the boat. And we're both looking at each other. We're actually laughing because we're like, well, I guess this is it. we were tucked in a cove. So probably what would happen, we'd just, fall overboard, and then we'd end up on shore somewhere and have to probably get beat up pretty bad at that point because you're exposed. But we made it inside, but we had a pretty big laugh about it the next day because we were both had that look at each other and we're like, yeah, that's it.
Oh, man. I actually did a program when I was in college called Semester at Sea. And
really?
Yeah. So we lived on a cruise ship that did not have any cruising facilities, but we were on the ship and went all the way around from Canada around Southeast Asia, around through past Malaysia up to India, and then around India to Kenya, around the Cape Horn of South Africa, then over to Brazil, and then up to Cuba, and then up, we finally docked in New Orleans. And
that's awesome.
It was a fantastic experience. In fact, I've recommended many, many people to do it.
But there was a ship, I think it was maybe 2 years after I went, and they were traveling from Japan, from Canada to Japan, and they got hit by multiple rogue waves out in the middle of the Pacific Ocean.
Oh, wow.
And they had some instances of people losing fingers from doors that got slammed when they were trying to get back into their bunks. And they didn't do an all hands on deck because they were concerned everyone would get hit by these waves. And they were in the middle of the Pacific. And a bunch of parents of their kids, once they docked, said, "You guys are you're coming home. We're not letting you do this program."
And I had a fantastic experience. When I hear, you know, these places that you've been to and you're living on this ship, I mean, I'm just, it sounds amazing. It sounds fantastic.
You know, I saw like there was a boat over in Port Antonio in Jamaica just recently. It was a Dutch boat. They were all like, they were out of high school because in the Netherlands, they finished high school at 16. And then they were doing like same thing, semester at sea. It's kind of a trade or something like that if they wanted to go into maritime. And it was an older schooner type sailboat. And they were having the time of their life. They were, you know, swinging off the trapezes and stuff and swimming around the boat. And I didn't see any of them that looked unhappy.
I'm sure not.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And among these locations that you have been to, you know, and I've got your here regard just these places that you sailed, Gulf Coast, Great Lakes, Pacific, Alaska, Panama, Florida, Caribbean, Bahamas, South China Sea. You know, among these locations, you know, do you get there and ever go, "Hey, this would be a great place for real estate development," or do you see do you have any knowledge of these locations internationally that have a lot of money they're going towards them, or places that would be a good development location?
Yeah, I kind of look at most of those pretty much everywhere that I go. Like, it'd be really nice, and then sometimes, you know, some of the smaller places that it's tougher to do business and stuff, and then I think about how I really always refer back to how great it is in the United States, of how business friendly and how easier it is to do business in the United States, and how our climate is like none other. You know, I mean, best country in the world, that's all kind of relative to what your cultural or likes and dislikes are. But like, as far as like the financial opportunity, it's America by far. I mean, far none. I don't think I've seen a place that even has the mindset that we do in the States when it comes to, you know, just business, being business friendly and open to moving money around and opportunities that we can develop. You know, the mentality is kind of like, well, I don't know if that'll work, but hey, let's try it. A lot of other countries, you get that, no, that's not going to work, or we don't do it that way. And you got to talk to these 15 other guys, and it's a year later and you still haven't started the business.
I love hearing you say that, because we've had a lot of talk, I think, recently, which I might even be the one who spurns this on, but there's just so much consternation here in the U.S. right now. And I love hearing kind of the patriotism you just bring up, and you go, "Hey, it's better. The opportunity's better. The mindset's better." And I love hearing that.
I would recommend for people that are, you know, maybe having some issues with the way things are a year ago, try to do some of these things somewhere else, and then let's revisit the conversation, because I mean, it's far superior. It's, you know, there's second to none. I mean, and that's my personal opinion, but and just because I know when we're supposed to start on the boats, a friend of a friend was giving me a job, and I literally flew back to the States with $20 in my pocket, and I borrowed the money for the airline ticket and the money in my pocket. I never looked back. I mean, I landed with $20 in Fort Lauderdale, and, you know, I did okay with it, because, you know, it was a great career, and, you know, and if I can do it, and, you know, so can anybody else. It's not difficult. It is with its hard work. If you're going to fail sometimes, it just means, I like what David Goggins said. I'm a big fan of his. He said, "It's not a failure. It just means you got to do it again."
That mindset of the American is probably our most powerful thing. It's interesting you brought that up. It's like Alexis de Tocqueville, you know, wrote long ago when it first came over, and just that's the unique thing that makes America what it is, that individualism, that, you know, like we're that the far end of the spectrum of individualism, and
the individualism comes with the innovation. I think that's what really sets us apart, is that we're willing to tear something completely apart and put it back together, right or wrong or indifferent, or give it a shot. you know, and the innovation. And I think it's, you know, with all people are up in arms about a lot of these AI and ChatGPT and all these things, but I say, look at all the benefits that it could possibly do for us, you know, and we haven't even thought of some of these things that are, that we're going to do with it.
Oh, for sure. You know what? I've been reading Dilbert comics lately. They've just been popping up into my Facebook feed. Yeah, like, but like from the 80s and 90s, I read one literally today, this morning, that said that the you know, they were in the office and Dilbert was being introduced to the new robot that was going to take over everyone's job in the next 2 years. It was just a 1989 comic.
Yeah.
Then there was a 1987 Dilbert comic that said his dog made a, obviously I've been reading a little too much Dilbert lately, but his dog said, hey, I made a newspaper that is timeless. And it said, and this was in 1989, a Dilbert comic from 1989, and the newspaper said, I'm paraphrasing, but it said, you know, home prices are up, trouble in the Middle East. 1989. So
that's funny.
Yeah, it's refreshing to hear that, you know, these things that, like, you're saying these things that have been said for forever about America. You know, it's refreshing. It's good. It's good to hear, right?
You know, my dad's Jamaican, my mom's American, and my parents, you know, I lived in Jamaica when I was a kid and we moved to Texas, and my old man has always been a great entrepreneur and always, you know, a big proponent of working for himself. And he'll even say that for a business climate and stuff, it's really bar none. And the unique thing about the U.S. is that it's a fairly young country and we don't have all those hang-ups or class systems and things like that. If you can come to the table, you can participate. A lot of things that I know from my personal experience, things that have held me back were really going back to the mindset of, because I didn't see somebody do it or somebody told me that it wasn't possible. So I kind of just stuck with that. And, you know, as I get older, I just realize that most of this stuff that we're taught or what I taught myself is not true. You know, it's not that it's not true, but it's you know, these things are possible. You know, if you can, somebody had to think of all some of these things before, you know, and all these new innovations, you know, people said the same thing about electricity, you know, the telephone, you know, it's going to be the bane of our existence. It's going to be the end
of
the world.
It's
going to
replace us all. Yeah. That's what they said when the tractor was invented, you know, about farming, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, this is true. You know, that was the stat that was before the 1920s. I think it was that some 90% of the U.S. population was farmers.
98.
Well,
98% of the U.S. population was agricultural. Of the workforce. Yeah. 98% of the workforce was agricultural.
Well, it's the same thing that they said when the printing press was actually, this book that I'm reading now, Killing Sacred Cows. It said it was the same thing that people said about the printing press. They said, well, the copywriters will be out of work and it'll mass market. It'll dilute, you know, the importance of it. But in actuality, it actually, the growth was exponential because now there's people that make ink. People are making printing presses. People are making books. People are reading more. People, you know, there was just all these things we didn't think about that enable people to grow
more.
They're
still copywriters.
Still
today.
Still there.
Yeah.
You know?
Scott, I got a question about, to kind of like get back to your kids a little bit, and I also want to hear more about your father later, because that's super cool that you were raised by an entrepreneur. I want to hear about that. But with your kids, you know, I'm curious as to, you're gone for long periods of time, so I imagine it's challenging to build a relationship you want with them. And so then when you're home for those short periods of time, did you have any things that you intentionally did to make sure that you were fostering a good relationship? You weren't just coming home and being like dad, the disciplinarian. Like, what was your strategy to that?
For me, for the most part, I tried to be the best that I could be and tried to be as present as I could be. When they were younger, my wife and I, because she worked on boats also when we got married, you know, we said, well, one of us has to, you know, stay home with the kids. And she, since I already had the career already going on the path, you know, she was with the kids. You know, she's a great mom, a great role model, a great, also has a very great entrepreneurial mindset as well. And she comes from both of us come from very strict conservative backgrounds as far as family values and things like that. We're very strict with those things. And I also worked for a couple of other people where I was a couple of jobs when they were younger where I was home a lot more. So that helped out a lot. I worked for a guy that probably one of the best guys I ever worked for. He called me out of the blue and said, "Hey, when's the baby due?" And that was my second daughter. He said, "Well," I said, "Well, it was September." And he said, "Okay, well, we're going to do a trip 6 weeks before and 6 weeks after. And in between those two times, don't call me. Don't tell me anything about the boat. You need to be at home with your wife and your kid." For the most part, I kind of focus on being present. And, you know, there's no perfect way to do it, but I try to spend as much time as I possibly could and still do. I mean, they're a little bit older now, so the times are fewer and far between. Well, if you guys have teenagers or not.
I struggle being present. I think most people can relate to that. Like, being present is an actually really challenging thing to do, especially when you're busy, right? You're captaining boats and you're working on capital raising for real estate syndications. How do you do it, man? Like, how do you be present?
Well, I've found just over the years, and it's kind of recent, I want to say within the last 5 years, that if I schedule my time a little better, like this is work time, this is family time, you know, because they have certain schedules with school and stuff too. Like dinner time is dinner time with us. We used to have like a Friday night was our thing, all of the big time Friday night. When they were younger, we would pick a country and we would cook some food from that country, and my wife and I would get some drinks from there, and maybe the kid would make like a dessert from there. So we'd make a big mess in the kitchen and stuff and hang out in the backyard and eat and drink and mostly hang out with each other. And I would recommend that because we kind of literally traveled the world in our backyard, which I thought was...
Yeah. These are the gold nuggets I'm talking about, Max, that we've been talking about. Yeah. Like, I love it, man.
I know. I love it. Yeah. I love that. In fact, you're making me think about like things to do, you know, with our family. Cause we're like, you know, how do we, you know, what can we do this enjoyable for the kids, you know, that they can do right now?
Young, yours are older.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. But it made it kind of interactive, especially like if they can get their hands dirty and just some kind of stuff, you know. I would like to think that we're still a pretty close family. And, you know, our families are pretty close. Like one thing that was really great that came out of COVID, which, you know, there's a lot of really hardships that people went through with that. But what ended up happening is that myself and my family, we do a family Zoom every Sunday at the same time. And whoever wants to get on, gets on. We all, my family can be quite loud. We all talk at the same time. So nobody really knows what's going on. It's pretty, pretty comical sometimes. But, you know, we all get to catch up and at least feel connected that way.
Are you still doing that?
Yeah, we do it every Sunday.
Wow, how long have you been doing that?
Yeah, since 2020, four years.
That's cool. We did that during COVID, and you're making me want to re-investigate that.
You should. I would.
Yeah,
I would recommend.
So one question I have, with your schedule of 6 weeks on and 6 weeks off, does that allow you, when you're off, to just truly be off? I have trouble being off, you know, and with that, are you able to kind of come home with the family and go, "Hey, I got 6 weeks," and I'll...
The boat stuff, I'm kind of like the designated person ashore for the other captain and the other guys, because I'm in Florida and there's a lot of boat vendors there, but it's not a whole lot of stuff that I do while I'm away. I might answer a few emails and stuff, but for the most part, I'm off. But I find that a lot of times I end up working more because I really love meeting people in the real estate stuff and just doing a lot of these different things. So I'm probably more, I work quite a lot when I'm at home too. And my wife works from home as well. And then, you know, the kids are in school. My oldest daughter, she's in university, so she's not home. The other one's pretty busy with clubs and stuff. So I keep myself busy. You know, I keep telling myself I'm not going to take on something when I get home. I'm going to relax and do something, but I usually don't. I go home and take something else on, and a new project, a new real estate venture or e-commerce I'm messing with. But I like what I do, so I don't really look at it a lot as work. My old man told me that all his friends that are retired, they're all dead because they didn't have anything they were passionate about or they liked doing. You know, and a lot of these guys that I've worked for on these boats, they continue to work because one, either they really loved it and they were passionate about it, or they just didn't really know what else to do. And it kind of was a reason for them to get up and do stuff. You know, I worked for an older gentleman, one of the guys that gave me one of my first captain's jobs. And he worked 7 days a week just because he liked doing the deals. You know, it wasn't really stress to him. You know, he had already made it. He didn't have to do it. He did it because he enjoyed it. You know, he liked putting the deals together. You know, he was a real estate guy. He had been in for most of his life, you know.
So what did your dad do? He was an entrepreneur the whole time you were a kid? What was that?
His first job, he was an accountant in Jamaica for Price Waterhouse. And then he didn't like working so much for other people because our grandfather, he owned a farm and a merchant shop in Jamaica in the country, a store. So my dad worked there when he was growing up, so he learned a lot of that from him. And he got into trucks. We had a trucking business. We would haul fuel in Jamaica when I was young. And then in Texas, when we moved there, we had trucks and heavy equipment, and then we had a trash business in Houston, Texas. And we had to work, my brother and I and my sisters and my mom, everybody kind of pitched in where they could. But my dad is very good at business and very good at those things. He did very well. And he did really great until he discovered sailboats, and he sold the business and just bought and sold heavy equipment. And his sailboat is his passion. He loves a sailboat.
Is that what got you into maritime?
Yes. I went on the sailing trips, and then I kind of just fell into, you know, I needed a job. You know, long story short, I was in Austin, Texas. I had a IT business, and I was working in the IT field, and I was back in Jamaica, and the business went under. We lost everything. I decided to stay in Jamaica, and then a friend of a friend asked me if I wanted to work on a boat, and he was in the Navy with this guy, and he asked me if I knew anything about working on boats. I said no, and he said, that's fine. And so I borrowed the money for the ticket and borrowed the cash out of my pocket and flew to Fort Lauderdale, not knowing how that was going to work out, but I never looked back. Love it, you know, being on the water, sailing, and I used to windsurf and all those things.
That's the $20 story. You went to Fort Lauderdale with $20 in your pocket, and yeah. Now you've been a boat captain for now 25 plus years, or a portion of that.
After a couple of years, because I had the guy that my friend was in the Navy with, it was just a great family, great people. He kind of showed me the ropes, so to speak, and taught me a lot. And he said, well, you got to get your captain's license. You got to move up. And he actually was the guy that encouraged me. He was like, look, we did all these charters. You got some money sitting down. You got to buy a house. You got to buy something with it. Buy some real estate. Because he had a couple of houses. So he kind of put me on that path. So, you know, you never know where the world's going to take you if you just kind of step out of your comfort zone. Because once I got on the boat, there was no turning back for me.
So, and going into your real estate career, and when was it within that you started buying deals?
I bought my first house in 2002, but it wasn't until many years later that, you know, the family got bigger. It's probably 10 or 12 years later that, you know, rolled into the next house, 2015 or so. And then that kind of started the investment journey. And then there was a couple of years, probably 2019 or so, when I got into the multifamily stuff. So it was quite a bit later. I'd done quite a few other things that did not work out. Some did, some did not. But I always had some, always tried things because, you know, I always figured there's another way to do something.
You know, later is a very relative term. You know, because I hear your story and I go, you know, I mean, this is great. I mean, you've got a career you love. You've got time with your family. You've got ability to buy more real estate assets, to buy multifamily, to buy single family houses, and to create a fund. And to hear that you did all of that after, you know, what some people would just pack it up. You said Florida, after a business failed with $20 in your pocket, encouragement for your family, said, hey, I'm going to make this happen. And now you got which is just fantastic to hear.
I look at everything as, you know, it's timing, because during those years, I was focusing on my career and focusing on something that I love doing. Everybody has, you know, all things are not for all people. So, you know, I love real estate, but some people would never get involved with it or never do it, you know, and that's fine. You know, I just, for me, at the end of the day, it's just, I want people to know that those options are there if they choose. And I'm not trying to convince anybody or trying to, you know, sell anybody on anything. You know, this is just what I did. That's all.
So I got a question on the family stuff. How is it having teenage daughters?
It's been pretty good, actually. I mean, my wife is, like I said, very traditional. She's pretty strict with a lot of things, and we discuss a lot of things. But when it comes to the kids and stuff, she puts the hammer down. And I think it's just because we put the foundation down when they were young. I would say that my kids are probably doing a lot better things than what I was doing when I was there.
I think that's you do not mess with immigrant parents. You know, like they're the strictest.
I just want to make sure if my kids are ever listening to this, you're doing great, girls.
You know, on that comment with the immigrant parents, you know, if you're working to come here, then you're working to raise good kids.
Yeah.
In my opinion. You know, I would say, you know, if camp blanket for everyone who comes over, but you know, but if you're coming over and you're mentioning, you know, and for you, hardworking, American dream, and you've had dual citizenship. You said Jamaica, but you had a parent
My mom's an American, and both my parents are very disciplined and very, you know, they were very strict. I mean, they're both from big families. My mom is one of eight, and my dad's one of five. And I'm one of six kids. So we had a pretty big family. And, you know, everything was about family. I think that was probably the thing that we stressed the most with our kids, is that everything's about family. You know, when things, good, bad, or indifferent, just you always have your family. You know, that's the most important thing. People say that a lot, but it's really your actions. That, you know, if you really want your kids to be great, is one, just spend as much time as you possibly can. Because an older gentleman said to me, look, no one has on their tombstone, I wish I would have worked more. And also, the only person 20 or 30 years from now that's going to remember that you worked late, probably your kid.
Yeah. You know, the comment that you make, the family is the, you know, really the most important. They're the thing that you will have no matter what. It's really the truth. You know, ups, downs, careers going good or careers going bad, or tragedies that family have. You know, and when you look at, you know, friendships that people have, you realize how kind of temporary, depending on phase of life, a lot of them are. And I mean, you're not good people, or not, I mean, you don't miss a lot of them, or you know, have people that you still care about. But your family is the one who's really going to be there no matter what. I think about some family members that I have who suffered some tragedies. Some of my dad's siblings had some things that happened within their family. You know, you realize how much, you know, it really is the family that's the one that deals with some of these things.
How quickly things can change, you know, so you have to enjoy that time while you can.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And
I'm sitting here thinking, like, about your Sunday Zoom session and how much I love the idea. Yeah. What's the best time of day? What time of day do you do that gets the best attendance?
Well, for us, because we were doing it on Saturday nights, but it seemed like, you know, a lot of people were, you know, where it was here, there, and everywhere. Some, a lot of people like to go out. Some people just want to relax. So Sunday, well, it was 6 o'clock Eastern. Some of my family's in Texas. Some of them are in California. So that seems to kind of work, because everyone's kind of, you know, winding down from the weekend or what have you. You know, you might have had a little barbecue or something, and then sit down. And, you know, sometimes we're all eating kind of together, you know, while we're on Zoom and stuff like that. And I, you know, Zoom has been a pretty big blessing, you know, but I have to realize sometimes, like, don't necessarily need to do a Zoom call. Maybe I just do a call.
You know, I mean, all the technologies helps us reach out, which is great. You know, my dad loves saying FaceTime. He can see his grandson. You know, the reason I was asking about, you know, how it is having teen daughters is, you know, Trevor and I are both relatively young dads. You know, I've got a daughter due in April, and Trevor's got two right now. And we have some, or, you know, I'll let Trevor, you know, comment on this as I'm done. But, you know, we often have these plans of how we want to, or I want to, you know, expect things to go. This is how I'm going to raise my kids, you know, and then we
talk to someone who's got more experience, and, you know, and they go, whatever you're thinking is not going to be like that, you know. Or...
Well, each one of them is different. I mean, and each one of them, you got to treat a little different. You'd like to think you could have a blanket policy, but each one is unique. And the thing that I always found was interesting is the way they are kind of when they're babies are kind of what their personality is when they're older as well. There, you'll see a lot of this coming out later on.
I can see the differences between this, you know? Yeah, I got a 4 and a 1-year-old daughter, and I can tell. Dude, yeah. I can tell the younger one is like the adventurous one, right? Maybe the tomboy, maybe the, you know, all these maybes, but she's definitely like the older one. I can tell is like girly for sure, loves pink, loves high-heeled shoes, loves doing makeup. And then the little one, like her favorite thing to do is fall off of the couch or whatever she can climb up and fall off of. Right? Like, she's just adventurous, you know?
That's awesome. Yeah, there was a lot of that, you know, and there's some nuances and that kind of changes a little bit here and there. But for the most part, I mean, there's a lot of things that kind of remain the same that are consistent with that. But another older guy, he told me, and he's since passed, he told me, said, look, your kids are probably going to be good kids, regardless of what you do, because you and your wife are good people. You know, the same thing I would say to you guys is you're good people, but just watch who they hang out with. That's the most important thing. Check their phone, you know, check their, who they're hanging around with, who's that guy, you know, who's this, you know, because it really makes a difference. And I thought back to all the times, like, you know, I got into trouble because I didn't make a decision to leave, and not making a decision is a decision also, because I didn't choose to leave.
Yeah, you know, it's funny about when you say choosing to leave, you know, I mean, with, there's kind of this idea that with peer pressure, it's this nature of someone saying, here, do this thing, whatever that thing is. In reality, it's not. It's just everyone's doing something, and that's all it is, you know, and, you know, you just go along with, you know, whatever that that action is. Yeah, I
all right, you know, whatever. And then like, oh, that's, you know, you think back like, oh, I really should have just walked on that one. But with kids, there's no magic bullet, magic eraser or anything. You just, I think if you just spend as much time with them as you possibly can, you know, I think that lays the foundation for them to be, you know, who they are and be good upstanding people.
That's a really, you know, good point. Yeah, probably the best thing you can give your kids is your time.
Yeah, you don't get it back. They don't get it back, but they'll remember. They're not going to remember something you bought for them, but they're going to remember something you did for them or something you did with them.
Yeah.
You know, like, hey, remember that time? You know, and like we were talking the other day about when we were in Italy and we had the apartment, and like we were sitting out on the balcony and stuff, you know, and just we were just watching the world go by, and we were sitting there just kind of hanging out, and my wife and I were having some wine. We were playing cards. I think about that all the time because I was like, man, that was a really nice moment. We could have been anywhere. A lot of people I've heard, especially younger people, say, well, I don't know if I want to raise my kids in the States or raising my kids here. But, you know, come to find out, regardless of where you go or what you're running from or what you're trying to do, the constant is that you're going to be there. And, you're the one that has to be the guide, whether you're in Tornado or, you know, or Texas or wherever, you're going to be the one that has to take responsibility to raise that kid and just be with the kid. So it doesn't matter where you are or what, because you, when you see it all the time, you see some kids that might be from some really terrible hardships and tough backgrounds, but they're really polite, really good kids. Their parents spent a lot of time, maybe they didn't have a lot of money and they were in a really bad area, bad situation, but they, you know, they got the discipline, they got everything, you know, they got all the great qualities that a good person has. It doesn't know any bounds, you know, that time is the most important thing because you can't do it over.
Indeed.
Yeah, that's the truth, right? And one thing we can never get back is time. Yeah. I completely agree with that. In fact, that's one of the reasons we all, or for me personally, went into real estate and make sure I could be around for my kids. Or, you know, starting the entrepreneurship road.
this is great. I mean, we should have done this before.
That is great.
So, Scott, thanks so much for being on. And, Scott, if guests want to get in contact with you to invest with you and your fund, how can they get in contact with you?
It's pretty easy. It's investwithscottkidd.com. And all my links and everything are there, social media and everything are all on the site. And more information
is raw. Awesome. And, you know, we can also get a copy of this podcast on the Slack channel, realestatedadspodcast.com. And there'll be a link to this individual video as well as information on how to get in contact with Scott and get in contact with other dads who are listeners of the podcast. So, Scott, thanks so much. And we'll look forward to talking to you soon.